from the Squamish Chief.
This is the Squamish Sound. I'm Keely Bartlett.
And I'm Stephen Chua. This is the 11th episode of our weekly podcast.
You'll hear the story behind the story as we take you into the newsroom. We'll talk about what did and didn't get into the newspaper this week.
On the show today, we're covering a fire that burned down a local cannabis grow-up and a Squamish artist who got commissioned by the Game of Thrones series. But first,
we're having a contest for local students. If you've ever wanted to say, "This is the Squamish Sound," now is your chance. The winner gets to introduce the podcast next week. So if you're a student and you're the first one to send us a completed and correct Squamish search crossword from this issue, that's April 11th, to news@squamishchief.com, you'll be the winner.
Okay. Now, we're going to be heading up onto our top news stories of the week. First up, a cannabis grow-up fire. So this was a really, really big highlight. First of all, it's not very often that you get a fire as big as this in the downtown area. Second of all, it's not very often, very often that this happens to be a grow-up. So it was definitely one of those stories that kind of...
You just can't make this up. No, it sounds like it's straight out of Bon Cop Bad Cop, which is an excellent Canadian-made movie. And everybody had a lot of fun online commenting about how our fire chief's last name is Stoner, and he helped put out this fire. So, Stephen, you're the one who reported on this. You were our reporter on scene taking some really epic photos of smoke and firefighters in action. Tell us how you came across this story, because you weren't actually in the newsroom yet.
No. Okay, so how it goes was I was actually just commuting. Well, commuting is a strong word. I was walking to work, and what I saw was this big plume of smoke just kind of rising out of the horizon. And, you know, the funny thing is that, like, for those of you who don't know, my house last year actually caught fire, and this set off like all sorts of like kind of weird memories. And I was just like, I've seen this smoke formation before.
This kind of fire before.
Yes, this feels very familiar. And then after that, what I did was I texted our editor, Jen, who was already in the office. I was like, "Do you know if there's anything happening?" And, you know, a few exchanges later, she's like, "I think there is." And then I started hearing sirens. I started seeing, like, cars kind of rush by. I was like, okay, there's definitely something going on. So I rush back to my house, grab my camera, and then after that, rush over to the scene. And lo and behold, we have a whole warehouse, which is basically caught fire. If, you know, for a lot of, this was a really funny point. Every news outlet in the city was just like, "Did it smell like pot?"
And the answer, the answer,
at least when I got there, I think it had been burning for about 15 to 20 minutes. When I got there, it smelled like horrible industrial, like those, like chemicals. I couldn't quite point out what it was, but it was a very not nice industrial smell.
And at this point, did you know that? Did you know what the smoke was from? Did you know that it could have been pot?
Right. So at that point, you know, the building looked kind of familiar, and I just started asking around, "Hey, what's in that building? Do you know what's up?" And everyone who is just kind of standing around just said, "Oh, I think that's the pot grow up." But the thing with, you know, the process of reporting and how some people were like, "Oh, why didn't you know this sooner?" or whatever. Even though if, you know, there are witnesses or whoever that say, "Oh yeah, I think it's a pot grow up," or, or whatever, that's not enough
that's
to go by.
That's hearsay at that point.
Exactly. So that's why there's a little bit more of a delay than some people would imagine, because we have to go through official channels to make sure that that is... that
exactly
is actually
what it is.
What is happening.
Because
so,
we can tell you that there's a building on fire. This is where it is.
Yes.
Fire rescue is on the scene. That's about it, because we need to wait for more details from the people who are the experts on the situation, not just people who are standing around.
Right.
You're at the scene.
Yes.
You're seeing this in front of you. You've already talked to our editor. You're going to do the story. You're taking photos. You're speaking to people in the crowd. what about the fire chief?
Right. So the natural response for anyone would be like, why didn't you just go like talk straight to the fire chief? Which makes sense. But in this case, one thing you do have to take into account is the fact that the fire chief is busy helping fight the fire. So it's not always as easy as people think for media to just rush over to the firefighters, you know, just barrel over and be like, hey, give me a quote right now, right this second. Mm-hmm. Because we do have to be mindful of the fact that there is an emergency happening and that there are a million more important things that the fire chief has to do right that very moment. Mm-hmm. So at that point, how it works is we usually try to give them a tiny bit of space and instead start talking to eyewitnesses. Mm-hmm. So what I started to do in that case was talk to people who were there at least, if not right at the beginning, then very close to the mm-hmm. beginning of the fire happening. And then I managed to find one guy who says that he was working in a nearby construction site, saw the smoke go up, one of the first people, according to him, to call up the emergency services, and his crew, according to him, apparently was the one that kind of started banging on all the doors on that facility, mm-hmm. trying to get people out. And according to this person, one person did manage to come out.
Right. So let's talk about part of what you just said is that we are trying not to interfere with the fire rescue responding to an emergency. And part of that is where we position ourselves. And like the other witnesses, you were at the line. Not the best place to be necessarily if you don't have to be there.
Mm-hmm. That is absolutely true, because one thing that you got to realize is that when something is on fire, especially in an industrial area, mm-hmm. that's not going to be the best thing for your lungs or your health in general. And at that point, we had no idea what was on fire. And it could have been, for all we know, something actually quite toxic, something that could have been quite detrimental to the air quality. You could be inhaling some pretty toxic stuff. And, you know, I spent the whole morning at that scene. And as soon as I left, I was having like headaches. And I could only imagine what someone would be feeling, especially if they were any bit closer mm-hmm. or with a little bit more exposure. Like, it wouldn't have been good for your health. So like, if you don't have to be there, probably not the best to be there. Mm-hmm. Although I know it's easier said than done, because how are you going to turn away from something as
if you see something
crazy
happening,
as that? Yeah.
Keep a safe distance.
Absolutely. That's definitely a good thing to keep in mind. And I guess the next thing that sort of came to mind was we started seeing a lot of messages on Facebook going like, you know, why can't you update it a bit faster? Why can't you say that the fire is out now? Hey, I saw the fire was out now. Mm-hmm. One thing you got to realize is that from the angle where you are at the line, it's a good distance away from the actual source of the fire. Mm-hmm. So you could be seeing smoke die down, but unless you're a firefighter actually in the facility looking at the actual source of the flames, mm-hmm. you'll never be able to know. So that is the reason why we held off on saying that it was out when the smoke started to die down.
Well, thanks for that, Stephen. I hope you don't still have a headache.
No, luckily I was able to sleep it off, I think, at the end of the day, though yeah. it was a long one. But that wasn't the only interesting thing that happened yeah. in our town.
So from fire to ice, I guess.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about... Thank you very much. We're going to talk about how a piece of the Game of Thrones series was in Squamish for a while and nobody knew about it because our artist, Sarah Symes, was on an NDA, a non-disclosure agreement with HBO about what she was doing with Jon Snow's cloak. So if you're familiar with the series, which I've watched a few seasons of it, but I haven't finished it yet, so no spoilers. Mm-hmm. Jon Snow has this cloak that all of the members of the Night's Watch wear. It's this iconic costume. And Sarah Symes, you'll know her from the banners that hang downtown, and you might even have a piece of her art yourself. She does some abstract work, and they sent her this cloak as part of a commissioned piece. And so what's really interesting about this story that is going behind the scenes for this is Sarah actually gave us a heads up that they were going to make this announcement of her part of the work for this project on Monday. But she told us, I think it was Friday, And so I was able to talk to her on Saturday because I work on Saturdays and people can feel free to give me a call then. And she asked us if we could hold it until Monday. And so that's what we call an embargo.
Yes.
And we don't necessarily have to follow them, but out of respect for the people that we're working with and interviewing and who are bringing us this information, we generally do. And so I wrote the story on Saturday. We had the photos, it's all ready to go, and it was ready to go for Monday. So that means that instead of finding out about it on Monday, scrambling to try to get a hold of her, we're already ready. And it's just perfectly timed. We can drop it in and there it is.
Yeah. I mean, like, for a lot of people who are kind of curious to whenever an announcement happens, you'll see in some major news sites that a full, like, 1,200-word story has magically appeared at the exact same time that an announcement drops. That is basically how embargoes are working, because they have been pre-writing that for a certain amount of time.
That is not a 5-minute story by any means.
Exactly. So you shouldn't expect that much from us all
not
the time.
Not every time. My favorite part about this Game of Thrones art story is that this cloak was in Squamish for a month and no one knew about it. And
wow.
Yeah.
One month.
For a month. Yeah. No one knew about it, like, because she was under this agreement that she couldn't talk about it. I think it's so fascinating that, you know, I wonder what her neighbors in her neighborhood are thinking. Like, did they had no idea it was there, that she was walking around in the garden wearing this cloak. We were joking in the office that her neighbors must have seen her and just been like, what's the artist doing now? But it's just a good reminder that even in Squamish, when sometimes people think that all we do is the outdoor activities, there are cool things happening that your neighbors are doing, and we want to know about them at the newspaper. So, you know, shoot us a message at news@squamishchief.com.
Absolutely. We're going to now bring it over to our editor's pick, where we bring in our editor, Jennifer Thuncher, and she's going to tell us what she believes to be the issue of the week. Jen, what's up this week?
Hey, do you like Dolly Parton?
Maybe. I mean, like, I'm not, I haven't listened enough to her catalog to really make a firm judgment. I know of her. I've heard, like, maybe a couple of her songs, but I can't really say if I like or dislike her at this point.
Okay, that was a safe answer.
Mm-hmm.
So this week I talked to someone from Sea Sky Community Services about an unrelated, sort of related issue, which is daycare spots and childcare spots in Squamish. And as often happens in our jobs, you head out onto one path and you end up seeing a bunch of forks in the road. And in this case, the fork was Dolly Parton.
Cool.
Why, you ask?
Yes, why?
So Dolly Parton actually has a lot of influence in Squamish, wouldn't you know? So there's a program that Dolly does. Maybe more people know about this than I did. But Dolly Parton has the Dolly Parton Imagination Library, which is a program where a child receives a free book every month in the mail until their fifth birthday. So they partner, that organization partners with local groups, in this case Sea to Sky Community Services, to provide books in countries all over the world, which is something I didn't know and is pretty amazing. So locally, she is the organization. I'm sure she's not personally on the phone, but it's paired with supporting parents on the road to kindergarten. It's a Sea to Sky corridor program for kids 0 to 6. And so in 2018, they mailed 5,760 books to Sea to Sky children. Through this partnership. I know.
Wow.
And in 2019, their target is 600 families. So that's going to be $25,000 for their side of it. And they're looking for a sponsor, I suppose. What's really interesting is that even in 2016, the organization was mailing out 1 million books a month.
What?
I know. So who knew? I guess she's hugely passionate about early learning and literacy.
Whoa,
and
okay.
It has a big impact in Squamish. The woman I spoke to at Sea to Sky Community Services, she said that she does the most that this woman has ever heard of for child development and early literacy.
Well, good
so
for
who
Dolly.
Knew?
Yeah, that's crazy. Well,
now you know.
I do. Well, thank you for that, Jen.
See ya.
speak.
Working 9 to 5.
Oh, so you are going to sing.
No, I'm not.
Okay. The Squamish Sound is brought to you by the Squamish Chief. The music for this episode was produced by Stephen Chua, cover photo by Clayton Matthews. Have a story tip? Give us a call at 604-892-9161. Send an email to news@squamishchief.com. You can read these stories and more online at squamishchief.com or subscribe to the newspaper and have the news delivered to your door every week.